Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Writer Peter Murphy, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
And where could we go next except to the end of the world? So we're going to talk about apocalyptic entertainment today. TV shows, movies, games about the end of the world, dystopian futures. I suppose it's always been around, but there's quite a lot of it around at the moment, isn't there?
There has been for the last 10 or 15 years, and it's hard to know if people go there when they feel safe or when they feel unsafe. But it's been an ongoing, never-ending stream in gaming, in young adult fiction particularly, since about 2010, since the Hunger Games boom, in film, and I think social media and the anxiety-provoking nature of the beast itself really promotes and plays on this in terms of clicks. Everything is, nothing's mildly gloomy anymore. It's always completely apocalyptic. Something that's never happened before.
Yeah. Yes, of course, of course. And we can sit back and say that because we've been through it all. Yeah, and like The Last of Us back for season two at the moment, and bringing together the whole gaming side of the end of the world, and lots of it on TV as well. Silo, The Handmaid's Tale back at the moment, Fallout, all of that. So do you think, do these kinds of books, movies and TV shows, do they surge in times of kind of crisis and uncertainty, do you reckon?
I think they do. I think a nerve is exposed in the culture, and the subject matter resonates with people, and then the nature of the entertainment industry being what it is will happily exploit it and mine that baby for money. Some of the horror shows of my teenage years, your researcher just told me that they're remaking Threads, which is...
What was that?
Threads was perhaps the gloomiest and most depressing pseudo-documentary film ever made in 1984 at the height of the Cold War. It was a BBC production. And it quickly became a cult item as the most terrifying, hopeless drama ever made about the possibility of nuclear Armageddon.
So the time is right.
I won't be watching it. It was bad enough the first time. It's the only DVD I've ever actually put in the bin because I couldn't stand to look at it anymore, even on the shelf.
Yeah, when we were coming of age, late 70s, early 80s, there was a lot of future shock around stuff then across music and literature and everything, wasn't there?
It was really alive in the culture. Like if you look at J.G. Ballard's novels but far more popular stuff like I saw The Omega Man when I was about 9 or 10, just before my mother threw out the television all the brothers stayed indoors in the hot summer of August 78 watching the World Cup, and she was like, that's the end of that.
Right.
But not before the damage had been done, and I got to see Charlton Heston stalking this empty metropolis in the midst of a vampire pandemic, which is kind of interesting. I mean, the book it was based on was I Am Legend by Richard Matheson, a great short novel, which then became the Will Smith remake. But it ties in kind of all the phobias that we have. There's a sort of lemming-like wish fulfillment about waking up in the city and it's completely empty and it's all to yourself. And there's a bit of like cosplay going on as to, how would I run this show if I had a baseball bat and a flamethrower?
Does it speak to something deep in us that if I was that individual, like, how would I handle it all?
Yeah, it's totally primal, but I think it's not primal even in a toxic male kind of a way. It's like the opposite. It's like, dear God, would I last 5 minutes in this environment? There was a really interesting book by Neil Strauss. He wrote a book called Emergency about 20 years ago. And he was basically a kind of middle class New York kid who grew up without any survival skills whatsoever. He's a computer nerd and a rock journalist, and he put himself through a sort of boot camp experiment to learn how to operate a propane cylinder and kill small furry animals and survive in the possibility of a total meltdown. And also, I mean, in terms of the culture now, COVID had a big thing to do with it. Like, COVID was kind of...
Yeah, because,
like,
we got a taste of that kind of thing in real life.
A very comfortable middle-class banana bread and red wine taste,
yeah,
of it.
Yeah, okay,
but
yeah,
nevertheless, yeah. Our...
There was rugged individualism there, nonetheless. Yeah.
In Aldi, fighting for toilet paper, yeah.
Yeah.
That was about the extent of it. But it was...
Bowie was the big man for the end of the world around the time I was coming of age as well. He kind of mined that too, didn't he?
Yeah, Bowie was a child of the post-war generation, which would have been Aldous Huxley and the Russians like Zamyatin and all the great post-war. I mean, a lot of the Russians had to use sci-fi allegory in order to tell the truth about the state of the life in the Soviet or under Stalin at that time.
Yeah.
So they couldn't write realist novels. So there was a great boom in Russian and American sci-fi, Ray Bradbury and all that. So that was Bowie's generation. And also all those musicians, 2001 A Space Odyssey had a huge effect on them. So the natural kind of lead on from that was, well, Dr. Strangelove came before. That's the original kind of end of the world as we know it, satire.
Yeah.
Which is Steve Coogan is doing the stage production of it right now. So
yeah, that's a mixed effect.
But yeah, Diamond Dogs, 5 years off Ziggy Stardust, all the way up to Black Star, and a lot of the original punk stuff. Like I had been writing about this for a nonfiction project over the last couple of years, and once you start looking at it through this prism, all kinds of stuff starts popping up, like London Calling. Joe Strummer wrote the lyrics of London Calling after the Three Mile Island meltdown in Pennsylvania, which was the beginning of the spur for the No Nukes movement in the late 70s. So the times are rhyming. At the time when we were kids, you had unrest in the Middle East. You had an inflation going out of control. You had the Cold War was very much alive and kicking. So that from going from the late 70s into the mid 80s, I mean, if you do a Google search on the amount of apocalyptic hits in the top 20 from 1980 to 1985, it's astonishing.
Yeah, yeah.
Even like, you know, 99 Red Balloons, Frankie's Two Tribes,
yeah,
Ultravox's yeah. Dancing with Tears in My Eyes, Laurie Anderson's Oh Superman, Enola Gay. It's like,
we
were, you know, little goth kids or little metalers going. And I often think back when I look at the current generation and how they're dealing with the climate crisis and stuff like that, they kind of have the same sardonic approach to it.
And come here, the climate, even before it became more of a kind of a popular concern in recent years, climate has always been there in that kind of apocalyptic stuff, hasn't it?
It has. Well, if you look at the flood myths, they go back to, there's the Book of Genesis, obviously the Great Flood. There's Gilgamesh. There's the Mesopotamian flood myths. This is encoded in our civilization, and even in a wider sense, you know, you can imagine the sight of a volcano in those days. It must have looked like the opening of the seventh seal.
Interesting you mentioned religion there. Does all this date back to religion, really?
There's, I'd say, since people first started drawing hieroglyphs on the wall of a cave, there was a sense of not being in control. Like, a thunderstorm must have looked like the end of days back then. So, I mean, the big daddy of it is the Book of Revelation. Which for years I thought was the Apostle John, but it was John the Evangelist. It was 90 years later. And that was, it always kind of frightened me as a kid because we were never taught it in Catholic schools. We never studied scripture the way that the Protestant and Presbyterian kids did. So, it wasn't an evangelistic culture. So it was a bit of a mystery. It was like, what's all this about seven seals and swords and flaming demons' heads and all? It was like I got more of the Book of Revelation through Iron Maiden songs than I did through stuff. I read a great book by Elaine Pagels, who's a religious scholar, and she explained it as a political text, that it's actually a coded way of talking about Nero and the seven heads of Rome. And this is a persecuted Christian living on the island of Patmos and probably starving, maybe eating.
Okay, so a lot of these things are not about the future. They're about now, like,
yeah.
They're cautionary tales, are they? Yeah.
There is, as somebody once said, that the apocalyptic tales are always about now. And I think it was Orwell's great saying was like 1984 was about 1948. It was about Stalinists, the dangers of, you know, of communism, of, you know, the post-war uncertainty, the New World Order. All that stuff that came out of the Second World War, you know, was directly the children of Oppenheimer, all the radioactive bug movies and
The Thing
and all that kind of stuff.
But the funny thing about it all then is that when we sit down now to watch, you know, our Netflix or whatever, like, and we're watching whatever, The Last of Us or Silo or whatever, this all sounds like a very bleak conversation, but it's kind of like there's something comforting about it or something, is there?
It's a way, I'm sure Dr. Freud has written something about this, but it's something to do with how we displace our anxieties, how we offload our anxieties into a manageable
an hour in
format.
The evening.
Yeah, exactly.
At the end of the day.
A controlled dose, a little immunology would work wonders. But I mean, The Last of Us, which that's a real generational thing for me and my daughter, who is a gaming kid.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of our, the middle daughter, this is as a particular interest in. So we would compare, I'd be talking about The Stand, and she read The Stand, Stephen King, and she'd be talking about The Last of Us. And
bonding with your daughter over the end of the world.
Exactly.
Doesn't get better than that. Writer Peter Murphy, thank you very much. We'll take a break.